Good morning. This meeting of the House Committee and Regional Affairs Committee will come to order. Today is Thursday, March 31st, 2022. The time is 8:08 a.m. Present with us this morning are Representative McCarty on teleconference, Representative Shragi, and myself, Representative Hannon. Today our recording secretary is Lori Rowland, and I can't remember his name, Eric?
No.
Alex is our LIO moderator. I'd like to thank you for helping us with the committee this morning. If you are in person in the room, please ensure your cell phone is silenced. If you're participating remotely, please mute yourself when you are not speaking. On the agenda today is one item, and we will hear a presentation from the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, Division of Community and Regional Affairs on the FY23 state plan. And then we will also hear from the RULCAP program. First off is Department of Commerce, Community, and Economic Development, and we have Pauletta Bourne, Grant Administrator from the Division of Community and Regional Affairs. Ms. Bourne, please join us at the table and begin your presentation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Hannon and Shragi, and other members of Community Regional Affairs Committee. I am pleased to participate in this legislative hearing concerning the state plan for the Community Service Block Grant for Federal Fiscal Year 2023. Department of Commerce, Commerce, Community, and Economic Development would like to set comments on the proposed use and distribution of these funds. The Community Service Block Grant funds are...
Hold on for a second. Brief at ease. We're back from our ideas. Technology resolved.
So the Community Service Block Grant funds are allocated to the department from U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. We anticipate receiving approximately $2.3 to $2.5 million for fiscal year 2023, although that number could increase or decrease slightly. Federal requirements restrict their grantees to community action agencies. Rural Alaska Community Action Program, better known as RULCAP, is the only recognized agency in Alaska. By statute, 95% of CSPG funds received are granted to RULCAP. The department is authorized to keep 5% of funds to cover administrative costs. The purpose of the Community Service Block Grant is to impact the causes and conditions of poverty, revitalize the low-income communities, and empowerment of low-income families and individuals in rural and urban areas to become self-sufficient, particularly families who are attempting to transition off state programs. In order to be eligible to receive a grant, 42 U.S.C. 9908 requires states to hold at least one legislative hearing every 3 years in conjunction with the development of the state plan. The last legislative hearing was held on April 9, 2019. RULCAP is the beginning stages of developing the FY23 state plan. The state program and the activities which RULCAP proposes to undertake during the fiscal year. Because the state plan is lengthy, I will briefly outline the major components what the department and RULCAP have identified for the program. RULCAP will utilize CSPG funds to service low-income people throughout the state in several program components. These include administrative services, child development, community development, development and communication, planning and construction, and supportive housing. Each of these components are described in detail in the state plan. Also included in the plan are outcome measures for each of the program components. Program results are tracked and reported on a quarterly basis in terms of the number of clients who achieve a given milestone. Progress is reviewed by RollCap staff, who is to evaluate results and make changes when necessary. Both the department and RollCap place a strong emphasis on promoting maximum participation by rural residents in the elimination of causes and conditions of poverty. I have worked with RollCap in the daily administration of the CCV program and grant for over 11 years. They have demonstrated a sincere interest in helping the low-income Alaskans. Thank you for your interest in the Community Service Block Grant Program. Again, my purpose today is to educate the public and the program and accept comments on the proposed use and distribution of these funds. If you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you. Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you for being here, Pauletta. Did you say that you were the grants administrator for 11 years?
Yes.
Wonderful. And are you going through the RollCap public hearing presentation as well today?
Yes.
Wonderful. That's it. Thank you.
Okay.
For the moment.
Yep. And Representative McCarty, do you have any questions for Ms. Bourne?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will save my questions, but the big theme of my questions is the baseline and efficacy of RollCap over the past 3 years and the projected goals and objectives for the future.
Okay. All right. We'll come back to you when we get further along. All right. Go ahead and continue.
And that concludes my presentation, and I'll go ahead and bring up Teal Smith.
All right. Teal Smith, come up and join us. Teal is the Chief Executive Officer of RollCap.
Got a couple of handouts. Yeah. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being with us.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you, Representative Hannon and Shragi and those that are online. I am pleased to be here to report with Pauletta on Community Services Block Grant. And you have the handout that I just gave to you, but I'll refer to that as we get into the presentation.
Go ahead and formally on the record, give us your name and your title.
Yep, I was asked to do that, and I didn't do that.
It's first meeting.
Thank you. Teal Smith, Chief Executive Officer, RollCap. So, Paulette already kind of highlighted where the Community Services Block Grant is used, and I'm going to talk specifically about how we think about it, how we execute it, and what we're looking for in the future, and look forward to discussion as needed. So today I'm here on behalf of not myself, but I'm here on behalf of RollCap. Its long time rich mission on behalf of Alaska and its low income people. I'm here on behalf of the board members who are represented in a tripartite fashion throughout the state, and I'm just delighted to share such good information with you today. So, long history of success in serving, and a lot of money going to assisting these people in the low-income area. I'll go ahead and first highlight, I've been with RollCap now since 2018. So that gives you a sense. I was born and raised in Alaska, in the rural village of Dillingham, worked for the school system. You were a teacher, Representative Hannon. I taught for a while, did biomedical engineering, did business, worked for the Native corporations, and am delighted to be here representing RollCap today. But I flew back to a conference, a CAP conference, Community Action Conference, and I was just amazed at the CAP agencies created since the 1960s to fight poverty. And there is a multitude of people throughout our nation that work on this. And of course, we're the only CAP agency in Alaska, so we're delighted to be a part of that effort. One thing that Pauletta highlighted in her presentation was extremely meaningful. CAP agencies are unique in the way that they're not just trying to subsidize somebody's living. They're trying to educate, participate in healing, and help these individuals change. That's probably the single most important element that we work on as a CAP agency. And I wanted to highlight that as I go forward. So you see in my next slide, what I highlighted to empower low-income Alaskans, and that's exactly what we want to do. I'll talk about more about the advocacy, education, and so forth as I get into it. But what an amazing mission. As we look at our strategic planning this year as a CAP agency, we don't plan to change that mission, but we are going to stretch into these areas of development, which I'll talk about. The areas of development are shown in this particular picture. We were able to submit a narrative report, which is probably in your folder someplace, and I'm not suggesting that you need to pull it out and refer to it, but it is more detailed and allows you a deeper dive, but I'm going to cover highlights today, maybe some pictures and stories that would complement that narrative. But this picture right here, I wanted to share that every organization, including CAP organizations, go through change and improvement. Rural CAP is no different.
I have a question because it's been raised a couple times. Has Alaska only ever had one CAP agency? And in most states, there are many.
That's a great question, Representative. So, yes, that is correct. And it might be a good time for me just to briefly share and not do a deep dive. But what an amazing time in the 60s where we got our CAP agency. And Alaska Legal Services, ABI, AvTech, all came out of rural CAP and have spun off and continued their services elsewhere. But I think that's extremely meaningful. They leveraged that agency on behalf of the state and developing these particular services and areas, including subsistence and land management and so forth. Yeah. So, rural CAP is no different going through its change. We've had leadership changeover, staff changeover. I'm not here to emphasize that. We're in a very settled, organized place moving forward. And I'm pleased to report staff systems is all in a very strong, great place. I'll point to this, the foundation of this image, respect and constant improvement, is what we have emphasized as we reset the mission of rural CAP going forward. And what a great thing, especially during these tumultuous times, to really take a good look at respectful interaction between us and the people that we serve, and then seek for constant improvement in systems and processes. That's a good thing. So moving on, Representative Hennin, you highlighted this. This is a statewide organization, but I'm going to say that we cannot and have not and will not accomplish our mission by ourselves. We do partner with so many partners, funders, and stakeholders to accomplish this. And it's become imperative, these relationships, to accomplish the development in health, in education, and housing development. And I'll talk about specific examples going forward. But we have a rich history of partnering and succeeding in all these areas. But I wanted to just show the image of Alaska and our reach. But we also acknowledge the ANCs, the village and regions. We acknowledge the tribes. We acknowledge the CDQs and others that have similar overlapping missions with us. We try to communicate, partner, and leverage our services to complement theirs for sustainability throughout Alaska. So a couple of statistics for statewide impacts here. These would be in concert, committee members with others that are working on similar missions. Um, 233 adults and 315 children received transition and affordable housing. You know, RuralCap uniquely, I hope like many, look at the numbers, but more importantly, we think about the person that needs the service. And we think about it from there, and then we grow it. But recognizing each person has a right and a need for these services. So what an amazing thing to have 233 adults and 315 children, just for example. 125 families and homes were weatherized. There's a big weatherization package coming down. You all know that. We're tracking it. But I'll let you know where the board is focusing on housing, maintaining our low-income housing within Anchorage, but focusing on rural as well as we look at our needs assessment and the need in rural Alaska. Very serious about doing surgical development in housing within rural Alaska. We cannot do this, once again, you'll hear me say that often, without partners. Tribes are government-to-government relationship, as everybody knows. What a great thing. We do TNTA training. We talk with them regularly and often, support them, but also do have development conversations. For example, in the Hooper Bay area, we have a domestic violence shelter there that recently stood up. What a wonderful thing in a hub community, very needed in our rural Alaskan communities. But the tribe, the village corporation, and CDQ are all working together and collaborating on what next. After that, how do they continue to provide housing and services in an increased, better way? And then last but not least, 639 children were enrolled in early Head Start and Head Start programs. Now we realize that, again, this is in concert with all the others that provide this service, but what an important thing with my education background too. There is no healing and there is no change unless there's education first. So that's how we recognize that. And of course, you all know that, but I'm highlighting it through the RuralCap mission.
So those 639 children, is that the entirety of all the Head Start programs, or it's just Head Start programs that RuralCap is coordinating with, and that there are, in that specific program, there are other organizations that do Head Starts, or do all of them filter through RuralCap?
Great question, Representative. No, just RuralCap at this time, and there's other statistics around, and they have their numbers and statistics, but it tries to complement that whole public school system, and this is RuralCap's focus.
Okay. So like here in Southeast, Tlingit and Haida Central Council operates some Head Starts.
Correct.
They're not incorporated in that number.
That's right. Chugachmeet has theirs and others, so, okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you.
And let me say that Representative Drummond joined us at 8:21. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize for my slowness this morning, and I apologize. It's Mr. Smith.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes. Good morning.
Good morning. I am the co-chair of the Education Committee here in the House, and I just happen to be researching Head Start and early Head Start numbers. And there are probably a couple of dozen organizations like RuralCap that none of them are like Rural CAP in the same way, but in terms of who's delivering Head Start and Early Head Start. And I've been trying to find the total number of kids that are served through Head Start statewide. It's at least 3,000.
Wow.
At least 3,000, and it's from birth to age 5. And the state makes an investment of roughly $7 million. That's mostly because the communities that are served can't afford the match. And then the feds provide up to $48 million in match. It's a really terrific leverage of federal funding, and it reaches so many kids. It's just critically important. So thank you for being one of the Head Start hosts, so to speak, Head Start providers. And I'm gonna come back with more information on the Head Start.
Great. And I'll also note that even though it's not a Head Start picture, they chose a picture on that slide of some of my youngest constituents.
Oh,
little baby boom happening in Hades, and that's the Parents as Teachers program.
That's
good
right.
choice, yeah.
My that's right. Yeah, I guess our image there does represent just how early our brain starts sucking everything in from 0 to 3 is the most influential time of all of our lives. So, Representative Drummond, thank you for your comments also about the big picture. That's so very important. Add a lot of value today. So,
actually, Madam Chair, I have a follow-up.
Go ahead.
I didn't read the fine print. I didn't realize this was a Parents as Teachers program.
Yes.
Does Rural CAP also deliver the Parents as Teachers program in parts of Southeast Alaska?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, that's great. And this looks like you've got, it's either sextuplets, which I doubt,
nope.
or six families. Six families that have gotten together, which is a really efficient way to use Parents as Teachers.
Yeah.
Because normally it's a visit, it's a teacher visits a single family and works with all the children in that family and the parents, of course. But this is exceptionally sweet, and those look like really happy little kids.
Yes.
Happy little constituents.
Yeah. Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. So I have a slide in here, Representative Drummond, just really quick. There's a narrative that tries to complement this presentation. I don't share all the information from the narrative, but we can proceed. So community-driven planning and development, I'll just briefly restate that. Under the planning element, Rural CAP is in the middle of their strategic planning with the board, and 4-Acre is working through that with us. Lori Wolf, it's great to have their leadership, and we will kind of finalize that this year and then continue to work with Pauletta on our quarterly and our annual reporting. But nonetheless, I wanted to highlight here that a big focus is obviously going to maintain the health and healing and education piece, but a big focus, as everybody knows, is housing and homes throughout Alaska, urban and rural. And so I took over the Rural CAP CEO role or executive director role at the end of last year. And since then, I have been meeting with all of the partners, funders, and stakeholders to see where our work is together and refresh that going forward and then set new goals. More recently, I talked to Providence. They own a lot of property and hire a lot of people in the state of Alaska, probably the biggest employer. And they're standing up their own permanent supportive housing this next year. They should probably open their door in 2023. And last I heard, but they are keenly aware of this population that we serve, have consulted with us on how we have done our permanent supportive housing. And we're looking together for opportunities with them, with Mental Health Trust, with South Central Foundation, with Cook Inlet Housing, and others that have similar missions. So ACF, just talked to Nina not long ago, what they're funding, Rasmussen, United Way, the Muni, all of those are community partners that are driven right now for better solutions for the homeless, but also for the low income in our villages. Okay. Looking forward, the other thing that is really important to highlight with housing is education and healing will happen when there's good homes, well-built homes to complement living, and then real education and healing can occur. And so that's why the healthcare entities are really important partners right now too, to maintain services to those that are traumatized, that are experiencing any number of difficulties in their lives through drugs and alcohol and others. Want to be there for each one of them to the extent that we can. You heard about a domestic violence shelter that we stood up. And that's really important because it's, again, partners, Denali Commission, and state and federal funds and matching, and all of that is coming together to support that. We'll continue to do that. Last but not least, they can't exist in their homes unless there is sustainability in terms of food. So food security is really important. I realize, coming from the village myself, being Native Alaskan, that there is a wonderful subsistence way of life. And yet we have now meshed that with big barges that bring in food, and there's stores. And so somehow that has to maintain, even in this kind of weird world of COVID and impacts as they are. So we're going to try to keep that in consideration and build off of that for sustainability and diversification in our village communities to keep our Rural Cat mission moving.
I feel like I should make a plug right now to make sure that you know about the governor's task force on food security. And there's a bill moving forward. The governor's task force is fairly short-lived. Have to have a report by September, and there's a bill right now to create a task force that will come to the legislature next spring with recommendations on food security in Alaska. The Alaska Food Policy Council is a key component of it, but I know that that bill was in this committee, there are specific seats, and rural agencies and rural providers of services have a couple of the seats on there, as well as I think DCCED, Community Development, the commissioner there has a designated seat, so the commissioner, their designee, and I would really encourage you to make sure that RuralCap has a voice in that process, because you're so extensively spread across the state, and you know, what we don't want is it to just be at the top level having that task force. It's got to make sure we are addressing the concerns from people who are in the most remote locations with the most food insecurity, and we're building plans to help all Alaskans have food security.
Timely stated. Thank you, Representative Hannon. And you'll notice the bottom picture up there. We have a GROW program as well, and you'll find that information through our, TNTA and our outreach, and we have a GROW program, but we are going to feel the pulse on that. Thank you, Representative.
What does TNTA stand for?
Training and Technical Assistance.
Okay.
That's through our Community Development Division. That's that education piece that when they're aware and willing, they learn, we train, and then they go off on their own in different things. So.
And sure. Representative Drummond. Thank you, Madam Chair. Where is that fabulous greenhouse?
So I should know the answer to that, Representative.
Sorry.
So no. That's actually good. I will know better next time. Sorry.
There's snow on the roof of it.
Yep. Well,
could be many places in Alaska. Go ahead.
That concludes my presentation today, and I did have Jasmine Boyle was going to join me today, but given situation back at the office and down here, we thought it better that Paulette and I report today, and she's available. Happy to have her at RuralCat. So.
Okay. Representative McCarty, I want to just check in with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So are we open for questions?
Yes, yes, go ahead.
Okay, so a couple things. I read through all this information while flying back, and thank you for it. One of the things is a theme of making sure that redundancy does not happen. And what is ROCAP doing to make sure that as you partner with, that you're not duplicating and these different organizations are coming to us asking for the same amount of money or monies for the same amount of projects. What's being done on that? And also what's being done in the showing efficacy with baseline of programs that could be a longitudinal evaluation.
Thank you, Representative McCarty. Let me start with the first. I think you said, what are we doing to avoid unnecessary redundancy? So that takes ongoing outreach to these individual partners that provide services in a similar arena as us, but also development planning. So it takes a real assertive effort on our part to utilize what communication avenues that we have, but also build new ones so that we know what these other organizations are doing in the future so that we can plan and be surgical and complementary to one another. So that's the effort, but you're right. In the past, there has been some overlap, and referring back to my earlier slide, we are finding the improvement area now in the strategic planning arena so that we don't have that unnecessary redundancy. Does that answer that question, Representative McCarty?
Follow up.
Go ahead.
Yes, through the chair, it does in part. One piece, as I was reading, it appears that RuralCAP is the point organization for these projects in the education and such. So is that true that the different organizations need to be reporting to you, or is there some point organization that's monitoring this?
It's less about a reporting and more about collaboration and sharing in that regard so that we complement one another. It could be more
Go ahead.
So how does one audit the progress of such if it's just collaboration but no data sharing?
My apologies. So what I mean by other organizations, there is that sharing element, but we do have a data team within our child development division, and we assemble all of that data and report it regularly. So there is a data and reporting element within our child development division.
And follow up, are there other data teams for the other components that ROCAP is involved with?
Yes, on the outcomes with through all of our program areas, we do have systems and tools that track the data and report that specifically.
All right, Representative.
Okay, thank you. And so the second question.
Would you restate that, Representative McCarty, please?
So what are you doing to demonstrate the baseline and efficacy or not so with longitudinal studies of the different programs?
Can I restate your question for you, Representative McCarty?
Yeah, that would be helpful. Thank you.
I think what he's looking for is how are you reporting success for programs? And I am sure for each program is probably different, but he's looking for the baseline analysis and show that you're succeeding.
Sure. I was focused on the longitudinal piece and trying to think of So we have a needs assessment that we do in our planning as our baseline. And so we reach out, gather information. But then we have the monthly and the quarterly reports that we measure against that. And then we do the planning going forward. So there's this whole system of assessment as a baseline, and then the regular monthly and quarterly reporting that shows the outcomes to that. So that whole system allows us to measure success as we take advantage of these dollars and services.
Representative McCarty?
And
go ahead.
Yes, thank you to the chair. So as I'm going through the materials, was that information presented to us in the material of what the successes or challenges are for RoCAP over the, especially the past 3 years?
So thank you, Representative McCarty. There are reports available at this high level reporting at this committee. I don't think that is that granular, but that can easily be obtained. There are detailed reports that highlight the successes in areas that need focus and improvement. In large part, I'll highlight this, if this helps. The data is really important to measure, as you all know, so we need proper systems. And one of the things that we have recently changed over, and this is in a more detailed modular CSPG report, where our accounting system was updated in the last 3 years. And that's very important, you know, to track all of the dollars and so forth. But also our HR system was updated. And so this allows us to really, really execute more accurately on our programs, track the dollars, and then there's other systems that support that as well. So that's, I guess, important to highlight that outside of giving you an actual report that does a deeper dive on that.
I appreciate receiving that. Thank you.
Representative Shragi.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Hannon, and probably ask some fairly simple questions that I should know the answer to, but I'm in my second year of my first term in the legislature and trying to learn a lot about all these various programs, and there's a lot to learn, so excuse me if my questions demonstrate some ignorance. So I'm just trying to understand kind of organizationally and how these monies flow. And so it starts with the federal government, and they issue the community service block grants, which flow then to the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. And then that's as far as I follow it. So then the funds are administrated by Pauletta as grants to RoCAP. And then RoCAP further administers funds to partner organizations and utilizes funds itself to administer programs in-house. Could you clarify if any of that is wrong, or maybe further clarify what happens with the money once it's received by RoCAP?
That's a great question, Representative Shragi. Thank you for doing that just from the top level. I think it's helpful all the way around. And I'm not going to pretend to answer for Pauletta today, but we do have a reporting collaboration here. So let me pause for a minute and hand the mic over to her.
Through Co-Chair, Hannon to Shragi.
And state your name again.
For the record, my name is Pauletta Bourne, Grant Administrator for Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development. That is correct, your analogy of how the funding is flowed to RoCAP is. So our part of our plan to Health and Human Services identifies the board's potential of how they will utilize the CSPG funding. Once we distribute that plan to Health and Human Services, then we have to show outcome measures of our goals based on the needs assessment that RoCAP is developing. So their partnership and needs assessment is a major component of how we develop the state plan.
And so if I might interject quickly, so I understand this is primarily a discussion about the plan today,
yep.
But I'm trying to back myself up even further to just understand the basics of how the money flows and how the program functions kind of outside of the state plan. So you receive the community service block grants, And then you administer those, you're kind of a pass-through to administer the grants to Rural Cap, because Rural Cap is really the only agency in Alaska that's able to receive those funds. Is that correct, just kind of very simply?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. Yeah.
And so monthly, Rural Cap does provide me reports and the status of what each department is doing.
I see.
Providing services.
So the state of Alaska receives the funds as the block grants, administers them as grants to Rural Cap, and then maybe this is where Mr. Smith steps back in. So with once Rural Cap receives these grants from the state of Alaska, do you then further distribute those funds to partner organizations?
Yes, you've stated it very well. That's exactly how that happens. And, of course, those that we partner with and that apply for them, we have that grant relationship with them. They take advantage of those funds and report back, and that's where we assemble that data and report back up.
And then another follow-up, if I may. I'm just trying to dig into this. So you receive funds that you then administer as grants, maybe not grants, I'm not sure on the terminology or the exact structure there, but you further pass those funds on to partner organizations. But you also use some of those funds yourself directly, and that's, you know, the 639 Head Start enrollees and those metrics, is that correct? So you do use some of the money in-house?
Correct. So I'll go back to some of the program areas that take advantage of CSBG funds. Planning and construction, child development, as we highlighted, community development through TNTA. Each one of these development communications all take advantage of these dollars and work with those that are interested, and they participate with and get grants, and we leverage these CSBG dollars with them to accomplish the mission of a block grant.
Further, just using this as an opportunity to, since we have some time, educate myself and understand these programs better. So I really appreciate this opportunity to just kind of have a conversation here and learn more. So with respect to the programs that you run in-house, do you, Mr. Smith, are you in charge of all those programs, or do you have kind of program coordinators for, you know, housing, one for Head Start? How does that work? And how do you decide what to do in-house and what to work with a partner organization to deliver?
Yeah, I think that that's a wonderful question, and I have a team of people that I work with. I have an executive team, and I have directors over each one of these program areas that have teams that they work with. So in the end, I think we have, at any one given time, including a school year, about 400 employees, some central to Anchorage at the central office and in the supportive housing and housing area, and then out in the communities that all execute this mission. So, You probably hear that I'm not doing a deeper dive in this area because I'm not smart enough to do that deep dive, but I have directors that know these programs intimately and have worked with them, and you bet. So I do have a great team to work with.
Wonderful. This has been very helpful. I appreciate it. I have some other questions, but maybe I'm kind of hogging the microphone here. Maybe Representative McCarty has further questions.
Representative McCarty? Do you have any further questions at this moment?
Thank you, through the chair. I'm enjoying hearing Representative Shragi's questions, so continue on.
Well, then I'm going to ask one, and it's slightly off script, and I'm looking for not holding you as the executive director at Rural Cap, but housing is a crisis across the country, across the state, whether we're talking about, you know, families who are in multi-generational underserved housing, inadequate housing, or whether you want to hire a state trooper or village police officer and there's no housing to put that person there. Are we making any headway in being able to house safely in adequate conditions Alaskans? And I guess I'm not, you know, and let alone are at risk for homelessness and supported housing needs, which we see concentrated either in our regional hubs or in our major urban areas, but just in rural Alaska, where we know we have so much substandard housing, and it just, you know, that it's been a problem my entire life, your entire life. Are we making, can you see a goal that we are achieving? Is there an achievable goal? Are we going to be able to house Alaskans in the 21st century so that when an outbreak like COVID, and we say we still have hundreds of people who live without running water, so when your primary mitigation is wash your hands and you're using a honey bucket and don't have flowing water, that's not an adequate mitigation. And I just don't have a sense of the scope of the magnitude of the problem or the inroads we're able to make. And again, not holding to it for you as RuralCAP director, but wondering whether you have a perspective on, can we get there?
I do have a perspective and I have a keen interest, but better yet, I have a board chair and a full board at RuralCAP that is focused on housing with all of these other entities. Representative Hannon and I would say, and committee members, that we are making progress. It's slow. There's housing authorities. There's a lot of others that are looking at solutions within the greater Alaska area, but we have much to do. We do have an out-migration problem from rural Alaska into the central hubs. So the low-income housing, that's why others are building low-income housing solutions, because we have such need in our urban areas, and there is some out-migration that is impacting that. Now, that said, there are many that still want to stay home and be where they grew up. So that is why we need to look at the economy. We need to look at housing. In part, it keeps them in the schools, keeps them at home doing jobs and subsisting, gives them purpose to be there. So that is a powerful key question, Representative, and that's what we're going to focus on in the years to come with our partners. And this is not just RuralCAP. We have regional corporations, as I highlighted, the nonprofits, the housing authorities, all looking at solutions right now and to work together to accomplish that. And so to me, we'll be able to take that to our next goal setting and how we accomplish that.
Thank you. I like to hear an optimistic voice on that. Representative Drummond, were you trying to catch my attention? I didn't have my glasses on.
Kind of. Okay. I could share. I have a broken pair right here. when I came to Alaska in the mid-70s, I worked for architects that were up to their ears in designing rural schools, community centers, and housing. There were hundreds, if not thousands, of modular homes built. I want to say it's been a while, but a lot of them were built somewhere in the Pacific Northwest and barged up here. A few were built in Alaska and brought to all of these villages. And I know that a lot of those homes are still standing. But, you know, today with and I know it's better for communities to do the construction, you know, to employ local people and construct houses on site in the village rather than bring them up prefabricated. But I kind of wish there was a modular technology, you know, sort of like not like Legos, but you know what I mean, pieces.
Yep.
The houses come in. You know, the walls are prefabricated with wiring and plumbing and so on and so forth, and they're stacked and assembled in the villages, which would be a really efficient way of doing this because of the lack of facilities to build them within the villages. But as Representative Hannon said, teachers are coming to villages, and I know Representative Zulkuski talked about teachers coming to some of her villages and having to live in housing with honey buckets and having come from places in the lower 48, and that doesn't do a lot for teacher retention and other kinds of state employees, troopers, VPSOs, any agency that visits a community and lives in the community to provide services. And I know that the villages do want to grow their own in terms of teachers, for example, but that's a much longer term perspective. And in the meantime, there needs to be housing. You know, sleeping in the school that's hard on people. That's really hard on people to sleep where you work. And then coupled with the lack of robust broadband and being unable to communicate with family and all of that, it's just creating the perfect storm in Alaska, all over Alaska, in every community, including the biggest ones, in terms of keeping professionals. It's just frustrating. But I would love to hear of the creative solutions that I know architects and engineers are capable of designing. And in fact, I wonder if an outfit like ANSEP isn't running classes of future Native engineers, Alaska Native engineers, to design and develop structures that could be more easily brought to the communities and help keep people in their communities rather than migrating to urban Alaska, where it's also creating a huge housing problem. It's really hard to keep up.
Representative Hannon,
go ahead.
Thank you, Representative Drummond, for those comments. I'll highlight that those thoughts and important points are well received. I will also tell you that that's part of the reason why I'm here with the Rural CAP team. Having grown up in the village, I grew up in plywood houses. I slept on the gym floors as I wrestled there. So, and I went outside and got my education and got an MBA and are working with these great heart mission people with CSPG, but also putting a business case around this. We cannot afford to run in the red. We have to put a good business case and a good model. So, Representative Drummond, as you talk about these, we are doing that housing business case right now with our assessment so that it's the right design in the right location and it's not one size fits all. So all of those elements are being looked at, and it's not going to be the same size house. It may be a tiny home is not the right word to say today, but maybe it's something similar, what that is. So we're looking at those options, and I'm grateful that you shared what you did, Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
You bet.
Representative Strage.
Hello again.
Hi.
Really, again, appreciate this conversation. And as I work through all the materials and try to better understand, I had a couple more questions. So you talked about I understand you have a tripartite board and then your executive team as well.
Mm-hmm.
And so the state of Alaska distributes funds to Rural CAP, and then Rural CAP essentially serves as the entity that assesses where there is need in the state and develops a plan for how to address that need, again, either by dispersing funds or by utilizing them in-house to meet a need that otherwise is not being met or there's no one there to provide services. And what I'm a little confused about or just not quite connecting is I read through the report and there's the community needs assessment, there's a work plan and funding strategy, and then there's the statewide plan. And I think I get where the needs assessment falls into things. That gives you the information you need to figure out where to distribute the funds. But how does the work plan and the funding strategy differ from the statewide plan? Are those part of each other? Can you tell me a little bit about that and help me better understand?
That's probably a two-part answer. Do you want me to kick that off, Pauletta, or would you like to take the state side? Because what would you like to do?
You go first, Nell.
Okay. So I'm going to say, I'm going to try to simplify it for my sake. Forgive me if it's not quite right, but we're here to execute on the dollars, but we have to build that model to execute. So we use all these program areas, but we have to have a good baseline. So we have to go out and find out really what is needed, and that's where the needs assessment comes. And then we kind of back into it and say, okay, what is it going to take to execute in all of these program areas? So that's where that comes from. And then so we back into it and build that program business case, for lack of better description, and planning and work plan, because you got to have real targets next, right, to execute it. And then that helps inform the state plan. Did I get that right, Pauletta?
You did. And actually, 42 USC of the program does require that the agencies do have a strategic plan, a needs assessment, and a budget to implement the programs.
Follow up with me. So to clarify, I think I'm figuring out where my misunderstanding was. The state of Alaska and DCCED is responsible for the statewide plan. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then rural CAP has your own planning structure with the needs assessment, with the work plan, with the funding strategy. That's within rural CAP. But the statewide plan is developed by the state of Alaska DCCED.
Right, based on rural CAP's input, yes.
I see.
It's separate but connected, if that makes sense. So that it strategically makes sense and the reporting is constant and appropriate.
And another follow-up, if I may, maybe partially addressing or following up on one of Representative McCarty's questions that I was also curious about. So rural CAP works to deploy a funding strategy and meet work plan objectives. So I assume if I were to go online to rural CAP's website or portal, that there would be a number of reports on the various nonprofits that you're engaging with or various work areas. You have reporting on kind of what activities you've been engaging in, what the results are, some set of effectiveness measures. That could all be found in detailed reports on Rural CAP's website, I'm guessing.
And if it's not on the website, it's available.
Okay.
I don't know that we put it to that granular level as you highlight. We wouldn't put everything out there, but it's available. It's a normal nonprofit. There's a 990. So if somebody wants to know, absolutely. And if there's something specific, I'm happy to follow up with you on that.
Thank you. That's very helpful. I'll sit back again for a second here.
Madam Chair?
Representative McCarty.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Smith, you mentioned a couple things I want to go back over. One is you're talking about the food security and how in the rural areas that become dependent upon a different paradigm of food security to become almost, I guess that's the word, dependent, when maybe some of the traditional values of food security have been altered. And is rural CAP exploring those traditional values, means of food security, and maybe not so invested in waiting for the barge to arrive?
Thank you, Representative McCarty. To the chair, I absolutely. In fact, I would highlight, and I'm going to go at it this way this time. I also sit on Bristol Bay Native Corporation's board, and it's one of the very successful ANCs in the state of Alaska, and we have a cultural and traditional, I'm going to say development program area that we're really, really going back to our shareholders and leveraging the wisdom and experience of our elders and letting the youth participate in resetting their understanding of language and culture. But that also has in it subsistence, a subsistence way of life. So Bristol Bay, home to 8,000 people, 10,000 bears and 50 million fish. you can imagine that our focus really is about understanding the intimate nature of that culture and how the people leverage it to exist and subsist. So to that end, that is just one part of Alaska that we're educating ourselves with as a CAP agency. As we look at food security, is really respecting and supporting those existing thinking and strategic efforts, but also supporting them, if we can, on grow programs and ideas that they may be, as they work on cultural, how do we complement that? So certainly nothing to impact that, but try to be parallel to that, Representative McCarty.
Thank you. Follow-up?
Go ahead.
So with that same thought is the question of housing. Seeing community has been a strong value in our rural communities. I envy that greatly. And yet it seems that some paradigms are being presented that housing has to equal four people to a house or five people to a house when there's many generations that have been part of the house, adding to conflict or challenges of taking care of elders or taking care of children. What is Rural CAP's evaluation on that aspect there?
To the chair, Representative McCarty, thank you. That all also becomes really important that we're culturally sensitive, but also collaborative and strategic thinking with different areas of Alaska. You're right, there is a community element in their housing and in functioning together, and it's not all created equal throughout the state. Mine is Yupik and Aleut in the southern part of Alaska near the Aleutian Chain. And so we're trying to be sensitive to their culture, but also complement it with that design. So to that end, if that makes sense, the housing does need to complement that effort so that they can subsist and maintain. Then that's where we are in connection with the nonprofit entities, the CDQs, all of those that are thinking about this as well, and the tribes. The tribes are playing a big role there. When it comes to leveraging the funds right now, they have big bank accounts and they're looking for people that have designs and plans to help them execute that. And that's what we're positioning ourselves to do. Definitely not to make more rural caps. That's not our point, but to hit a surgical support and design role to help them with that so that they can subsist and have a place to stay that's appropriate for that area.
Do you have any follow-up, Representative McCarty?
No, thank you. I appreciate that, and I look forward to seeing the future analysis of the weave of involving community and in the housing rather than something that's imposed upon a community, and that's not really part of the tradition and values of that community.
Very good.
Mr. Smith, you had a great description, but I missed the first line. I've got 10,000 bears and 50 million fish. How many people did you start with in Bristol Bay? Bristol Bay is home to.
This is years ago. I should probably update that statistic, but it still works. It's roughly 8,000 people, 10,000 bears, and 50 million fish.
And is it okay if I appropriate that and use it?
Yes, and you might even go up to 10,000 people, 12,000 bears, and 50 million fish. I don't know the exact number, but it's right around that.
Thank you.
You bet.
And then I am just going to mention, I know here in Juneau, Tlingit and Haida Central Council purchased a contractor when Representative Drummond was talking about modular construction. It's a commercial contracting agency that sort of built, their forte has been modular commercial buildings. They've built our two Housing First projects, ENA Alaska building there that were all built inside their plant. And then, you know, assembled very quickly because 90% of the work is done. The walls are insulated, the plumbing and electrical. And I know that when Clinkett and Haida Central Council purchased that contracting business last year, the year before, their goal is both workforce development. I don't know if they're looking at individual housing units or just commercial, but the idea of modular housing or modular construction inside a facility in this rainforest entity is a successful enterprise that they've decided to incorporate into their regional goals.
That's absolutely fascinating, Madam Chair. Did you say that NEA Alaska's building was built that way? The one right here on Main Street?
Yeah, the one on Main Street.
Wow.
That contractor's complex is near the Dipak Hatchery. It's a modernistic-looking building, and people always go, but it doesn't have many windows. It's tall and kind of skinny. I've always been sort of perplexed how these big buildings come out of it, but it's the size of their...
I smell
and I don't know the real terms for panelized construction, but it's, you know,
that sounds right. Yeah.
When they put the building up, it goes up in a matter of days because it's all been pre-constructed inside their facility. And
I smell a field trip, Madam Chair.
We will reach out to President Peterson, and I'm not sure who's in, but I know they purchased that with part of their, because they are a regional housing authority, and I believe they're intending to do some complexes and housing development, even though that contractor previously has been just doing commercial buildings, although I guess our Housing First projects aren't really commercial buildings, they are housing. Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
Representative Hannon, I would only just respond and say thank you for that. I probably sped right past this, but I think you bring out a really important point that one size does not fit all. Central and Southwest Alaska are different areas and require potentially very different designs. Now, can you get one that does, you know, 50% or 70% of the areas? Possibly, but that is the point of doing this research and background to make sure. What are the best designs for these locations? You know, can they be packaged in such a way that you can ship them efficiently and effectively? Is there a self-help element? Is there economy enough in the communities? Are there people that make enough money there to get low-interest loans to participate in that? Or what type? All these elements are part of making sure there's a solution in the communities, and that model has to be there. For it to be sustainable.
I know that in resources, one of the other places that I should know the name of it, but it's one of the Nana Corporation subsidiaries. They also do a modular construction facility that I believe is located in Wasilla, because at the Red Dog Mine, we recently had a presentation on the Red Dog and the new housing complex for the workers at the mine that was built at the Wasilla plant and then transported up there. And again, it's built, you know, built somewhere else and then assembled.
Yep.
Yeah, to me it is like Lego construction.
Yep.
But with the lights coming on.
Yep.
Representative Shiragi.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Hannon. So I was curious, as I just worked through all these curiosities I have, going to the slide with the map of the state of Alaska, titled Statewide Impact, and I was just looking at that slide, and I don't know what number that is. There we go. And I was just curious looking at that slide. So number one, Cook Inlet Tribal Council Region, 9 million, just under 3 for the Association of Village Council Presidents Region, and then number 3, Central Council Tlingit and Haida, Indian Tribes of Alaska Region. And I'm just curious, you know, I kind of expected Anchorage to be in number one just because there's such a large population in Anchorage, and I imagine many low-income families that would receive support. But I'm just kind of curious how those allocations are determined. I know there's the needs assessment, but, I mean, what drives the level of spending in any region? Is it kind of the population? Is it the economic strength of that region that determines what, you know, how much funding is going to go that direction? And then maybe a a second question to go with that, or maybe a clarifying question. When I see $9 million for Cook Inlet Tribal Council Region, is that $9 million that is actually hitting the ground in that region, or maybe that's where they're headquartered and then the funds are further distributed? So if you could help me to better understand that, I would appreciate it.
Sure. I think you, in your thinking and your question, highlighted some of the areas that or some of the ingredients that make up that particular allocation. Obviously, the economy, the population, the application of all those make a difference and allow these organizations or these areas to benefit by this. It's not specific to one area, but that you're exactly right. How do they get these funds? And all those are ingredients that determine that. And in the end, you know, are they feeling the pulse of these dollars and opportunities? Are they able to apply for them? Is there collaboration and partnerships that allow them to get there? And that's where these organizations really become important. The Cook Inlet Housings are really assertive on their end. In their area, we're trying to do our piece. I'm not going to try to distract your question, or Representative Shragi, thank you. For example, we're really good at weatherization. We know how to project plan that. We know how to assemble this. We know how to ship it. We know how to leverage community, hiring. And so now that we've come to this crossroad of development, the communities and tribes are now looking at us, and we're looking at them saying, we're good at this. You're good at that. How do we work together in that area? And so now we're not looking individually so much as holistically and as strategic partners. And that is going to change these numbers on this map, because we're now looking collectively at it rather than developing our unique organization mission. And now we're going to try to accomplish it together. But to answer your question, there's a number of ingredients that go into how they get what they get, and it's going to change going forward.
And just following up on that kind of clarifying question, so $9 million for Cook Inlet Tribal Council Region, is that $9 million distributed to entities that are headquartered there, or is some of that money actually bleeding out into other communities because it's maybe distributed to Anchorage but then delivered by that organization, that nonprofit, somewhere else?
I'd have to do a deeper dive on that. I think it's a combination of both, unless Pauletta can answer, and I'm not putting you on the spot. There's pass-through entities that take advantage of these dollars as well and pass them on to their communities. So that's a great question. I would have to get a little more information on that for you, Representative.
Oh, thank you.
Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just need a little clarification. For example, that $9 million, almost $9,300,000, and 215 employees. I imagine that's that $9 million is leveraged with grants and other resources, because that's not providing the salaries for 215 employees. And
no, that's right. Sorry,
I know Cook Inlet Tribal has a number of facilities in Anchorage.
Yeah.
The housing authority being right in my neighborhood, and I know they're doing amazing things right there, but I'm just trying to understand these numbers and how they are the springboard.
Sure.
For additional funding. And
let me pause for a minute, because I think Pauletta was going to say something to the chair.
Oh, the chair, Drummond. That's the beauty about the block grant program, is that we are able to mesh that funding with other fundings to help make sure we help prevent causes and conditions of poverty. And based on the Tripartite Board's input for the needs assessment, they also target different areas throughout the whole state to ensure that we are making the best of we can with the funding that's available to make sure the program runs. And the biggest factor of that, too, is that we have to show performance to Health and Human Services to show that, you know, these monies are reaching as many people as we can throughout the whole state. And this is just one area for us to show of that reflection of how we can utilize this funding for other areas throughout the state and leverage that funding.
Mm-hmm. To the chair, Representative Drummond, looking at these numbers clearly, I love questions of curiosity, so I will need to come better prepared to talk about these numbers next time. But but I am prepared today in that I am meeting with these organizations right now. And, for example, CITC, their new chief operating officer, not new now, came over from South Central Foundation, Leanne. And so we have outreach programs together for the housing and homeless, just for example. But we leverage dollars together. They have theirs. We have ours. Sometimes we package these dollars together to accomplish a particular service. Do I know all of what goes into that for them? No, but I do have the partnership dollars that we work on in certain areas. But I will have a kind of a better picture on these bigger numbers next round, or I can follow up with you as needed. So
great. Thank you very
Thank
much.
You.
Appreciate that.
Do we have any further presentation?
Not from me, but this has been fantastic.
Yeah.
Madam Chair.
Representative McCarty.
Thank you. There's a question that was, or a statement that was brought up, or a question about the workforce, and that these projects are done in the workforce. Like it was mentioned that Nanana has a prefab out of Big Lake doing that and is sent up to the areas there. Are we assuring that any type of prefab housing type components are done here rather than farmed out to the 48th?
So, to the chair, Representative McCarty, we're not in that development space yet. I actually appreciate the committee's conversation and awareness of what's kind of happening with other organizations and development projects. Ours is our building and development is in large part a supportive housing within urban, but we do have a large weatherization program throughout Alaska. And we are looking for development ideas. So we will be continuing to explore that business model and partnership with others that are doing it already. We currently do not have a rural cap design that we're putting houses in rural Alaska, but we will in the next 3 to 5 years as the board is directing us to do so. And that's what we're looking to accomplish.
A follow-up?
Go ahead.
I heard of some project out of Nome that they're exploring these 3D housing structures that will be possibly made in Pennsylvania and then shipped to Alaska. Hopefully we could just do these things here if they happen
right,
rather than giving it out to
right,
elsewhere.
I didn't miss that either, Representative McCarty. I think homegrown is going to be not only the best understood, but also the most economical. So we will make sure that's a priority and a focus.
Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Shragi.
Thank you. Just one other question that's popped into my mind. So I believe at the beginning of your presentation, you mentioned that AvTech and some of the other technical education entities that are out there were actually started within rural cap. And so yeah. I just wanted to make sure that I had heard that right and maybe ask if I could get that list of entities again. Let's start there, not overcomplicate things. Could you give me that list of entities that were?
No, that's great. And that was and is an education piece to me, and it's wonderful to realize. Alaska Village Initiatives, AvTech, Alaska Legal Services are just three examples of what came out of now what's called Rural Cap. It was a different name back then. but those are entities that came out of rural CAP years ago.
Follow up, if I may?
Go ahead.
And so, as I understand it, so that would be an example of where, you know, you received funding from the state of Alaska. You looked at your plan. You recognized that there was not an entity that already existed out there mm-hmm. that could provide that service in the community. And so that's one of those examples where you actually used the funding in-house to develop a training program, which then eventually was successful to the point that it branched off and became its own entity outside of rural CAP, but which I'm sure still collaborates and works with and likely receives funding from rural CAP. Is that all correct?
Better stated than I could have said it.
I don't think that for a second.
And I would say that that's the power of this. It was also a political entity because it helped with land claims. So there's an AFN connection. Of course, that's all handed off now to others that do that deeper and better. But absolutely, we leveraged the CAP mission as created in the 60s and these dollars. Representative Shragi, I'll highlight this one last thought, too, if I may. There were a lot of people that went before me at Rural CAP that did some amazing things. So I want to make sure and highlight them today. But also out of Rural CAP came a for-profit entity. Rural Energy Enterprises is a subsidiary of Rural CAP. And it ships Toyota stoves like you would not believe all over the state of Alaska. And so, and that actually started with less than $20,000, as I understand it. So these are some of the genius ideas and efforts that we want to continue to recognize through a CAP agency and really benefit Alaska in different ways.
And what was the name of that entity you just said that does the shipping of Toyo stoves?
So Rural Energy Enterprises is a for-profit company that came out of Rural CAP.
Wonderful.
Representative Shragi chairs the Special Committee on Energy, so that one got...
Perfect.
That
he got his attention.
Yeah.
Oh, you already had my attention, so...
Well, I said the right...
You gave the right example of a success.
Okay.
Let me just... Does Rural CAP still participate in funding at AFTEC? Or you're not part of that except for perhaps scholarship... You don't scholarship kids to attend? No.
So some of these we have an informal relationship with now, but they are standalone entities, obviously. For example, Nicole Nelson runs Alaska Legal Services. That's all separate and distinct. She does sit on our board, which is very meaningful and important. But then we have just other relationships. There may be some funding connection, Representative Hannon, but I would need to go do a little homework on how we complement one another's missions still today. So,
yeah. Anything else? We've grilled them all kinds of ways outside
Good.
The plan and the preparation.
Good.
And I just maybe a comment and just
please go ahead.
Thank you both for being here today and for your work. Maybe not always in the spotlight, but behind the scenes doing some great things for Alaska. And just found this incredibly educational, and I really appreciate the two of you being here today and just sharing all this information with us. Thank you.
Yeah, and I want to make sure and note that Pauletta's boss at some degree, so Sandra Moeller, who's been online with us, who's the director of the Division of Community and Regional Affairs, and I thank her for being there and for the state's support for a very successful program, to administer federal monies, but to see the success of them in the state, not just being deemed as, federal programs or federal overreach. Instead, these are federal monies doing vital work to assist Alaska's ability to develop itself, the human capital. And thank you for your work and effort on that. Representative Drummond.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. I, too, am grateful to learn of all the different ways that Rural CAP and the grants program benefits Alaskans. My usual contact with Rural CAP has been with Debbie Baldwin, your child development division director, and I've visited the facilities in Anchorage in the past, but she usually makes presentations to the education committee on the early childhood work. that you do and that I'm so interested in. So thank you for learning about all the other things ROLCAP does. Appreciate it.
Wonderful. I'm glad you know Debbie and know the history there and the work that she continues to do. I just caught up with her a little while ago. So
great.
You
excellent.
Bet.
Okay, with that, our next meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee is scheduled for Tuesday, April 5th at 8 a.m. And with that, we are adjourned at 9:33.